From the studios of NPR West, this is Day to Day. I'm Madeline Brand.
And I'm Alex Cohen. We begin today in Myanmar. The situation there remains grave. Days after a cyclone hit, relief supplies are still limited. The military junta has been resisting international offers of aid, but today a United Nations food agency says it's finally been allowed to fly in emergency supplies.
For more details, we go to Chris Kay. He's with the World Food Program in the capital, Yangon.
We've had some success in getting a flight load of high-energy biscuits into the country and get them through customs and out and into the field where they're required. And this has been something that, of course, we've been asking the government for clearance to do for some time. And finally, we've managed to get the first consignment of aid in. So I'm hoping that that's going to be the little trickle that's going to turn into a waterfall of assistance.
What has been the holdup of, have you met with any government officials? What are they telling you?
Yeah. No, I met with government officials actually on Sunday afternoon and started very much on this very issue to ensure that they understood the magnitude of the need, the potential of support that could be provided by the international community, the role that the United Nations system can play, the very sophisticated systems we now have for organizing and coordinating a major international assistance effort. It seemed that at the time that the authorities were very keen to be able to maintain their sovereign responsibility of assisting their own people in their own way. And clearly this has been the position that they've held for the last several days. And now I think it's beginning to dawn on them that they really do need to do something quite drastic in order to be able to save the people.
Have you been able to go out into the countryside, into the rural areas, and take a look?
I have not, no.
Have you heard reports from other people who have?
Yeah, I mean, we've had assessment teams out there, national staff. They won't allow international staff to undertake assessment in the affected areas yet. And the information that we're getting back is been very harrowing. I mean, just the numbers of people who perished as a result of the combination of the storm surge and the high winds. You know, it's just absolutely ghastly. I mean, the numbers are mind-boggling, and I can't imagine what it must be to experience and to witness the amount of corpses which we hear are just lying in shallow water.
So in the next, let's say, 24 hours or so, what can we expect in terms of aid and in terms of any help to the survivors who are now stuck out in these flooded areas with very little access to the main capital?
Well, assistance is getting there. I mean, you know, a number of agencies have had operational presence in the affected areas, and the authorities have been keen for us to provide as much support as we can from the resources that we have in country. The reality is that that's nothing like as much as needed. I mean, from the World Food Programme side, I mean, we've had 500 metric tons of food commodities in a warehouse here in Yangon before the storm hit as a contingency for this type of eventuality. And we've been moving that food out as fast as we can. So, I mean, there is an aid operation that is going on. It's not that nothing's happening, but it's just simply nowhere near like enough.
Right. And the United States has naval carriers standing by, C-130 aircraft ready to fly in supplies at a moment's notice. Is it possible at all that the authorities there would say, yes, okay, come in and let's have your supplies?
That would be very exciting if the authorities agreed to that.
But is there any chance that the military leaders will allow that to happen?
Well, you're much better off asking them. I don't know. I mean, you know, there's always around the possibility, and I think that we must remain optimistic. I know that there's a lot of international pressure that is really mounting, and the recognition, I think, must be there within the senior echelons of government here that, you know, it's getting beyond their capability. But what they will agree to is still guesswork.
Chris Kay is in Myanmar, in the capital, Yangon, and he is a representative there in Myanmar for the UN World Food Programme. Thank you very much.
Okay.
To get a better understanding of why the government in Myanmar is so resistant to outside help, we called Bridget Welsh. She's an assistant professor in the Southeast Asia Studies program at Johns Hopkins University.
The regime long has a history of isolationism, and it's very suspicious of the West. This goes back to its colonial heritage, but also the way the military feels that it is always being attacked. And many of those attacks are justified, but it also has basically retreated into a shell. you've seen in the last 6 days, and it has been 6 days since this tragedy struck, that the regime has been pressured to open up. India and China have actually responded more effectively, the UN and other actors, and you've now seen the regime say that it can allow international aid in. But it's used to doing things with red tape, and so the logistics are extremely slow. It's taking a very significant pressure and changes in the mindset and a recognition of the seriousness of the travesty that you actually have a response that actually is creating a degree of openness.
And can you tell us a bit more about this government? When we say the junta, who are we talking about? Who are the key players?
The main general is the senior general, Tan Shui. He is the person who has really made these very travesty decisions that involve creating a referendum on the Constitution to keep the military in power, which is scheduled to happen on Saturday. And even though it's been postponed in the crisis areas, it's basically perpetuating military rule. A government, by the way, that has had one of the poorest governance records in the world. It's got the second worst health system, and it has money to address these problems, but it's actually not effectively addressing the issues at hand. You also have a situation where you have a number of other people who are part of the junta, but it is very much a hierarchical system. And so the senior general is the one who is the key player. Younger colonels and others are seen to be more open to having change on the economy, but none of the junta want to give up political power because they see the interests are vested in them keeping in power. There are financial gains, and of course they use the issue of ethnic minorities to keep themselves in power, which of course is actually somewhat illegitimate because you have many of the ethnic minorities throughout the country that are actually facing serious discrimination.
How big is this regime that we're talking about there?
Well, the regime itself, the numbers of how you look at it make up about 10% of the country at most. And we're talking about civil servants and military individuals.
And how big is that junta?
Well, the junta itself, the numbers vary. People say it's around 350,000 people. But again, the numbers are actually very controversial.
You mentioned the upcoming vote on the referendum. How will these most recent circumstances and the reaction to this disaster affect the vote?
Voting already began about a week or so ago. And as a consequence of that, you have a situation where they have a very low threshold. They only need to get 25% to approve this constitution. I think that many of that will be in hand. There is a very difficult process in terms of the vote taking place in that the process is rigged. It's stacked in the favor of the military. There are supposed to be 10 people who are actually observing the electoral process, but in fact many of those people are from the regime itself. So you have a situation where many people who would want to vote no, and there is a big movement within the country for a no vote, may feel pressured to vote otherwise. So you've seen also in the devastated areas, the referendum process has been postponed. This particular area, you're going to have a good chunk of the country that will not have the opportunity to cast their vote, even limited vote that it is.
A number of different countries want to reach out and help Myanmar. Is the government there equally resistant to all outside factors, or are they more concerned about countries like the U.S.?
I think they're much more favorable to countries like India and China that have seen as cooperating with them and, of course, have invested in their country, particularly in their rich gas reserves. But I think there are gradations of how they relate to the international community, and the U.S. is probably the one that they have the most difficult relationship with because the U.S.'s position on the government as being illegitimate has been really steadfast, and the U.S. has been the most critical.
Bridget Welsh is an assistant professor of Southeast Asian Studies at Johns Hopkins University. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks so much.